Namaste. Good morning, everyone. Yesterday night, there was an interview and I read out parts of an email that I received, very beautiful email, which I would like to read out again. The last part I had not read out last night, so that is the part we can address this morning. Everything you say is deliverance for me. It is in my experience. I cannot deny any of it at any point. It's all so beautiful and clear. I can't argue over even one thing. It is that much in sync with my personal experience. I recently lost my cousin to COVID. I had always wondered if all this understanding would stand true if I lose somebody close to me. And yes, I am hurting, but I am not suffering. I know she's in a better place. I know she's being taken care of, and that was it for her, and I am okay with that. Tears come. It hurts to think of a 10-year-old daughter who lost her mom, but I am not suffering. There's an acceptance for what is. The understanding has helped immensely. The question, why did this happen, doesn't even come up. This is the first half which I've read out. Before moving on to the next, there are three very important pointers here. You see, this is a classic scenario of the test of how deeply one has been impacted by a teaching. Nothing could get more real than the loss of a loved one. So I am hurting, but I am not suffering. Hurt is bound to arise, you see, with loss. Grief is bound to arise. But that grief is now not overlaid with drama. Psychological drama. And in that sense, it becomes pure grieving. And as this person so rightly says, I know she's in a better place. Rather than suffering the limitations of a body, we don't know what God has willed for this person. And so this is a beautiful example of the teaching sinking into the heart. It does not mean that one has become cold and lifeless. If that was true, there would be no tears coming up, there would be no grieving. We are humans, these are natural emotions. And these are bound to arise. Even Ramana Maharshi, when he got the news of his friend passing away, tears arose in the moment. But as this lady says, questions like, why did this happen to me, do not arise. What have I done to deserve this? Why is God punishing me? And criticizing, blaming others or oneself for what has happened. So that dialogue of the thinking mind has stopped. There's an acceptance of what is, as she says. COVID has entered our home finally. My father-in-law is positive. But COVID has been unable to enter my being. I am able to do what needs to be done without fear. Everything is happening, but I am not doing anything. Even in the midst of intense sanitization rituals and managing home with no maids and dealing with Papa and an emotionally disturbed husband, I have not lost my peace for a single moment. You see, here's another very important pointer. What happens is, when the thinking mind is disengaged, one is available, more available for what is, what needs to be done in the situation. And then one is, one could say, much more beneficial. One is much more useful in dealing with the situation when that is one's state of mind. Now, regarding fear, the fear may also be there. In this case, it isn't there. But the fear is also natural. But what happens is that the fear sucks us in into this involvement. We get involved in the fear. Whereas if fear is simply witnessed as part of the reaction, as part of the process, and accepted as fear. You see, most of us are afraid of fear. We are fearful of fear itself. But some body-mind organisms, those timid by nature, may be naturally inclined to fear, some may not. The point is, do we get involved in the fear and lose focus and lose track of what is and what one needs to do in a situation? Or do we live with it, so to speak, and allow it to be? So this is another very important point that has been raised here. That despite having people at home who are not balanced emotionally, having to deal with the patient, having to deal with no maids, it's really a very overwhelming situation. But what brings courage to such a situation is the teaching and the understanding, when it sinks in, enables one to deal with what is and not go into the zone of what should be. Things should not have been this way. Things were so much nicer earlier. I have not lost my peace for a single moment. Gratitude is all I feel for whatever is. I don't say any of it with even an iota of pride. I will always be indebted to all those people who appeared in my life out of nowhere and served as my teachers as and when I needed to learn something vital in this lifetime. And that is again a very beautiful thought. And it's true, they appear out of nowhere. Suddenly, something pops into awareness, which strikes one, a teaching, a teacher, a message, some words out of nowhere. See, that is what is grace. How beautiful such kind of grace is, that at any moment something can happen which gives one a sense of comfort, support, to take one through a particular situation. The point is, how open are we for that? And I'll address this point after we finish this letter. The seeking has finally stopped. I take each day as it comes. The idea that I want to be enlightened does not hold any meaning anymore. The need to be nice, to do good, to behave a certain way, to look a certain way, just does not exist. Even when a thought enters the mind to be a people pleaser, it is witnessed. And the last point which I'd like to address, life has slowed down. I like the slow pace and the peace it brings with it each day and each moment. But is it okay to not suffer even after losing a loved one? Does it make one any less human? You see, it depends on what our definition of suffering is. And it also depends on who has passed away. For example, if someone is ailing or someone is very old, it is a natural progression of life to drop the body. For someone who is ailing and where perhaps it is irreversible, isn't it a relief that the body is being dropped and the person is free of that? So when these are not accepted, that is what creates psychological suffering. When these are accepted, the suffering is there, but the definition of suffering has changed now, because after all, a loss is a loss. But one is an acceptance of what is. One is an acceptance of death. So one is no longer fighting with that first point, which we usually tend to fight with. One is in acceptance of what is, and thereafter, certainly, let's say there's someone you have known all your life or a very cherished friend. Your form of suffering, maybe tears arising, you miss your friend. But that suffering seems so much lighter now than a big story attached to it. And the stories are generally related to, could I have done something better? What if I had not been this way? Should I have been nicer to this person? And that enhances the suffering. What if? Should. What if? Should. And then, where are we grieving for the loved one? We are lost in our own story. I. That is how the ego operates. It takes this drama and moves the loss back into itself, loss of me and mine. And is so focused on itself. How could I have behaved in a better way? How could I have this? How could I have that? Forgetting about the friend who's gone. Cherishing the moments. Remembering with fondness. Celebrating the good times. So as Rameshji would say, even the sage will grieve, grief will arise, but the grief will not be extended in the duration of horizontal time into mourning. It does not mean that only at one point grief will arise when the person is dead and it's over. It can arise anytime, whenever memory comes up. And that could happen often too. Especially in the initial days, that is still fine. But the involvement and the drama in the whole situation is dropped because the thinking mind of the ego which operates in the dead past or an imaginary future, is completely dissolved. Now, coming back to the point on being open, this is an important point on one's journey of life. Being open to receive, not coming with preconceived notions and ideas of what one has read in books. What appeals to us? What shines light on our journey of life? Who shines light on our journey of life? You see, in my case, as I mentioned last night, I was quite fortunate. I was not consciously on this path at all. I was the average youngster, reading the average books, going out for dinners and all that. But certainly I had suffered in my teenage years. After the loss of my father, all the challenges being faced, then survival issues at work, struggling to make a business survive. So in that sense, the ground was prepared and laid for the spiritual dimension, which is really not something else. It is everyone's life and living and how one deals with life and life situations. Now, when I was taken to meet the man who would turn out to be my teacher, I was not consciously into the subject, into meeting sages, into meeting wise men. None of that. But obviously, unconsciously, the ground was prepared. And I went with hesitation, you see. And yet, I was so lucky that the source blessed me. And despite my hesitation, dragged me to meet people like Rameshji and Eckhart Tolle. At least that bit of openness was there not to resist completely. And therefore I say in ignorance, because I was ignorant then. Yet the grace descended. So in ignorance, we can miss a lot. With our set views, rigidity, and set processes, we may not be open to that which is presented before us as a gift from the divine. And so look around, the people around you. Get a feel for whom you resonate with more than others. It could be your friend, it could be your building guard. It's just who it is irrelevant. To get a feel, which people do you feel comfortable with? What do people say that appeals to you? That makes quite a difference. Where is peace to be found? In which relationships do you find yourself wearing social masks? And in which relationships can you be who you are? Exactly how God made you. And then you will find that the universe truly supports you in this journey of discovery, in awareness, and to have one constant measure in life, through the challenges of life, where is peace to be found? Ultimately, on nothing external, because whatever is external is unreliable. One cannot depend upon it. It is transient, fleeting, comes and goes. And then the turning away happens. Then the dream of duality and getting lost in it starts dissolving. The last point I'd like to touch upon today before we can share anything anyone would like to is a one-line mail I received to explain love in the terms of non-duality, which is quite a vast subject, which I don't want to get into too deeply right now, but there is this misconception that non-dual love is cold. Let's just understand what is love in Advaita and why is it perceived as cold and by whom. Now, let's say in a room there is me or you and two more people. Or let's make it 10 people. The more the merrier. Now, in dualistic love, what has happened is I have already judged the people I like and I don't like. Maybe on the basis of how they look, what they say, etc., etc., etc. And I have compartmentalized and segmented already what I'm attracted to, not attracted to, whom I don't think I should talk to, etc., etc., etc. And so I've already laid the foundation of the polaric opposites, which at its extremes is love and hate. So let's say the people we like and the people we don't like, etc., etc., etc. Now let's say you go to a sage, the room is full of 10 people, and the sage accepts all 10 for exactly who they are, the way God created them. The sage knows that all that they think and say and feel is based on factors not in their control, based on their conditioning since they were born, how their parents treated them, the income group the parents belonged to, the geographical area they grew up in, the religion they grew up into. They have been shaped by conditioning, not out of choice. They have come with innate natures, not out of choice. So the sage sees that everyone is equally an instrument of the divine. And the sage accepts each and every one of those 10 the way God has created them. Because the sage knows that just as I have my flaws, so too the others. Nobody is perfect. So the imperfections, the so-called imperfections one sees in people are embraced as part of who they are. And then actually one sees these are no longer imperfections. It's just what is. So all judgments, all labeling, all condemnation fall away. The sage treats all 10 equally. He may still have a preference for a certain personality type. He may like the quiet types and he naturally is not inclined to someone who's very loud and vociferous, but there's no judgment anymore, you see. It is an equal love. Now, which love is cold and which love is not cold? That is why if you tell someone true love is impersonal, they don't like it. Whereas what is meant is that you are not in love with the person for who they are, and because you happen to like that kind of person with those attributes, qualities, etc., etc., but you are in love with their being because you see through all that. That is the oneness of being. You start seeing aspects of yourself in others, especially the ones you don't like. That, oh yes, I do recognize this. Maybe it is there in me to a different degree. After all, everyone is a mirror. Nobody is outside you. Every individual appears within your own consciousness. Every voice you hear is a voice within your own consciousness. It is not outside you. If someone is speaking in Iceland right now, that is not right now within your consciousness. But if someone you don't like is talking to you here and now, that is being heard in consciousness. And then that is being evaluated and judged and condemned and so on and so forth. But how close it is to us. Everything that arises in awareness is so intimate with us, so close to us. It has already been embraced by us. So the one who has been judged by us has already been embraced by us. But because of this illusion, this sense of separation, it feels that we are judging someone who is separate from us. With an I like and I don't like. And when you find that this teaching is really changing your perspective on people, on colleagues, on friends, relatives, people perhaps you formerly didn't get along with. You find such a relaxation, such a letting go. And you just marvel at the leela, how everyone is playing their part, just like in a movie. Everyone is playing a role in your life. And so you find that even if someone may upset you, once the teaching steps in or the understanding comes, you don't hold on to any resentment or words spoken, etc. You're again immediately available. You allow the relationship space, and something else beautiful might emerge the next moment. In true love, in that sense, there is no me person as separate from another person. And when that happens, it is impersonal. It is not impersonal as in cold impersonal. Because it is the love of the being shining through. Take the person you don't like most in your life and just see that they can't help being themselves, just like you can't help being yourself. Compassion may arise for both. I'm not sure, but I think it was Eckhart who said, compassion is felt oneness of being. So beautiful.
All right.
If anyone wants to share anything, they can do so now. Yes, Harish.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Today you've spoken of love, you've spoken of being. My predicament is, you see, before I even reach out to love another, I feel it's so important for me to love myself, to understand my being, because unless I don't evolve, how am I? So for me, to expect love from the outside world is like looking at the bottom of the sea and the level of oxygen. So I need to have a tank first for me to have that, have enough oxygen for myself to first understand how to take care of myself, how to sense my being, to then realize am I capable of having compassion for the other, or to even to think of the other, or to relate with people. So my predicament here is all my life I've never learned to love myself. So today I'm probably this lockdown into this kind of a state where I've started to realize, have more real eyes for myself to see that I need to have this process to begin to love myself. I've seeked out to talk to you is to help me, assist me into getting familiar with myself. I'm having a huge problem to find the pathway.
Well, Harish, thank you for being so honest in what you have shared. But you see, there are two things here. One is this can also be a kind of pitfall, because what happens is it creates an obsession with me. I should love myself. This is how I should be, and so on and so forth. Whereas if love is one's nature, you see, that's the whole thing. One's nature is to be loving and to love. It is we who have built up these barricades based on the sense of separation or divine hypnosis, you could say, which God created. If the focus is on the other, that is so beautiful, rather than this kind of, I should love myself. A lot of teachings say, no, love yourself, then only you can love another. But you see, that is actually a very simple thing. Because if you accept, Harish, that you are precisely the way God made you, all your challenges, all your circumstances were not your doing. Your conditioning, the way your parents treated you, the way you were in school, college, the religion you went to, were all gifts of God. Sometimes nice, sometimes not so nice. So where is this question then arising that love myself? You can only have this question because you don't accept who you are. And when you accept you are precisely the way God has made you, then there's this complete acceptance without needing validation from people, from loved ones, or from society. You're in complete acceptance that I am precisely the way God has made me. What I think and feel and do is based on factors given to me by God, by consciousness, by the source. So even this question of loving oneself drops away. One is in complete acceptance of who one is. And then one finds that one is in complete acceptance of the other. And that is love. So there is no this first I have to love myself, then only can I love another. That's just part of this dream, you see. There's no first, there's no other, there's no second. Your nature is love. You love to be. Someone else loves to be. The nature of consciousness is love. Electricity, when it is running through all the gadgets in the kitchen, is electricity. Each gadget comes alive because of electricity. And each gadget is designed to produce what it is designed to produce by the source. When you start seeing this in people, that it is the same electricity which animates everyone, each is designed to bring about whatever God has designed them to bring about. Can electricity hate electricity? Can electricity love electricity? Electricity is all there is, functioning through all and sundry. And that realization, that acceptance is what is love. That is it. So thinking in terms of this individual, loving myself first, then being capable of loving others, that if that is just dropped, you will find that your nature is to be loving. I can't hear you.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry.
I think there's a lot of background noise as well where you are.
Sorry. Just a simple question. If I am the gadget, if I haven't understood the electricity as yet, then how am I supposed to? If I'm a fan and I haven't understood that the electricity behind me is the source that I function as a fan, then how am I supposed to get out the air? That's what is my question. I'll unmute myself again for the noise.
Yeah, that's okay. But the thing is, Harish, behind you is not the source. The source is you. The source is you and the source is the other. There's no behind and front to it. And this understanding has to be allowed to sink in, to blossom. And when you start seeing that people are exactly the way they are, that acceptance is the understanding in operation. And then you really are open to people without judging them. And if that happens, you're open to yourself without judging yourself. And so it is just a question of allowing the teaching to do its work. You know, in your daily living, let's say today or maybe tomorrow at work or at home, if people are just viewed in this life, especially those who you feel have given you a tough time, if you truly accept that this was the script they were meant to play out. And if you are in acceptance of that, you will find a big shift from the way you thought about them earlier to the way you think about them now. And that big shift is love. Because what happens is we try to tell a toaster to produce juice. That no, you should not behave this way. You should behave that way, the way that person is behaving. And so when these demands on people drop away, the demands on ourselves drop away, because everything is a reflection. And so it is not first looking after me, loving myself, and then loving the other. They are both part of it, equal parts of it. And it's a simultaneous process. So this segmentation does not happen. And so if just take each day as it comes, even at the end of the day, just think about it. Who are the people you met? Was it only family? Was it a friend you spoke to? Just contemplate on it. Have your coffee in the evening. Just think, my God, it's amazing. Everyone is precisely the way they are and playing the role they are playing. It's quite fascinating when you allow that space to look at just relationships. Just keep the word love aside because it has too much baggage on it. You know, just look at people all the time. Just reflect, reflect, reflect. What upset me today? Who said what that upset me? And who said what that I liked? And in that investigation itself, or rather contemplation, this meaning of this word love will be uncovered. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Sandeep.
Hi, Gautam.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My question is, so we have got these five senses, you know, listening, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. And none of these senses comment on what they see. I mean, the seeing does not comment on what it sees. The listening does not comment on what it hears. Mm-hmm. But this thinking comments on each and everything.
Lovely.
And even that, but this thinking, this thought does not experience anything, yet it comments on everything.
Yes.
And we take ourselves to be this thought. You know, there's a tendency of taking ourselves to be this thought. So how to actually overcome this? I mean,
the recognition of it is the overcoming of it. The sheer fact that it is recognized,
mm-hmm.
or let's say witnessed, is the overcoming of it. Because if that recognition was not there, there would be involvement in it. You see, it's, let's take one of the senses. Let's say something is seen. I'm walking on the road and I see something. Now, seeing something, let's say there's a beggar on the street, I reach out into my pocket and give money. So seeing something resulted in an action based on the sense of seeing an action happened. Now, what does the me do? I gave money. I gave money to the beggar. That is the dialogue where the me has stepped in. But when it is seen that if the beggar had not been there, my action of giving the money would not have happened. This whole scenario is played out without the possession of the me saying, I gave money to the beggar. So the senses are operating and action arises because the sense of seeing resulted in a beggar being seen and resulted in me giving money to the beggar. And that episode is finished. The me steps in and says, I gave money to the beggar. Oh, I feel great. And then starts creating the story around it. So if the senses are left to operate for themselves without the me stepping in and claiming ownership of the action based on the sense, then one is living a life of peace. Does that answer your question or do you have something else?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Just want to get this clarification. Why this me steps in and takes the ownership of everything?
Because it is designed that way by the source. And it is the source that wants the me to uncover this design. That is the game of life. That to see the nature of the me, to see how the me operates, to see how the me gets involved and how the me takes ownership of everything because it derives its sense of self from that. You see, that is what happens. That is truly
the all of this matter. And all of this story is being.
All of the story is.
And all of the story is being witnessed. So this clearly says that I'm not this mind. I'm not this, the story that goes in the head.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you,
Gautam. Okay. Thank you for your question. Yes, Umayya. Are you there?
Hello.
Yes, Umayya.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
And this is a special thanking note to my master. Not more than 3 minutes.
Oh, God.
Not more than 3 minutes. I've written a special thanking note. First, I started. My 63rd birthday is nearing on 18th May. The changing process within me happens slowly from 8th April 2020. I would like to share how it helps me in my personal life. By listening your golden words given below some. Number one. It is very difficult to walk on path of Advaita track, yet I need peace of mind in daily living, so live in peace. It is very hard to accept others when they blame you for no reason, hence I'm thinking of conditioning, witnessing by be yourself, keeping more silent, which made me to move on daily life with little peace of mind. It is difficult to control thinking mind, but your words like stopping the stitches, not stitching too much, the thinking mind, helps me to live better in daily life. At home, day to day, handling my mother, I am like calmness in the midst of battle, which put myself as a witness is happening. This is from my heart, I'm telling, calmness in the midst of battle is very, very controlling my tears, and I'm telling this. When I find people talks negativity, immediately I will switch off mind. I cannot comfortable with those people. Though I'm trying to be more harmonious to others, it's a bit difficult for me in daily life. You have to help me, Guruji. It is very difficult to be harmonious with the people who hurt me. And I'm trying to be more calmness, silence, and witnessing, be myself, thinking in mind, everything is God's will, is way of my daily living. Every day, I'm discussing my actions and reactions with my daughter by correcting ourselves with your Advaita teachings. Helps me, makes me a better shaping person. Thank you so much for your lovable, likable, simple speech. With that, I end my thanking note, seeking my living Guruji blessings always. Thank you once again.
Thank you. That was very sweet. Thank you for sharing it. And all we can do is try. The results are not in our control. But as Rameshji would say,
I accept.
Don't consider your glass half empty, consider it half full. And if God has brought you so far, why do you think he'll drop you here? Trust.
Thank you.
Trust, faith, and patience. Okay?
True. Thank you.
Thank you.
All I need your blessings.
Yes, Rahul.
Hi, Gautam.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, good. You're in Germany, right?
Yes, yes. It's been a long time. I just want to report like a success story, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I spoke to you, actually the first time I spoke to you on one of these Zoom meetings, I asked you, you know, I want to change my job. I was very frustrated and stuff. So I did change my job. I did get a good, better job, closer to my passion. And it all started from that first time when I asked you, how do I go about it? You said, just keep this at the Lord's feet and let's see what happens, or let it be decided. So it was just so miraculous, I would say, that within 3-4 months after that, after applying all over Germany, I did get a job, and now I'm finally moved to the city. And so I really want to, I don't know, thank you or thank the teaching.
Thank the teaching. And
yes,
you know, it is actually this, you know, keeping it at the Lord's feet is nothing but surrender to a higher force that perhaps knows better than we know what is good for us. And then things happen the way they are meant to happen. You see, and I learned this lesson in a bit of a hard way. Because when I would go to my spiritual teacher in the early days, maybe for the first month or two, and I would tell him about a problem at work, his only answer would be, it was not like, oh, so sad, oh, I'm sorry to hear this. His answer would be, well, see what happens. And then I thought, you know, it's useless to go back to this guy again with problems because the answer is the same. But I am so thankful because he did not become a crutch. The teaching was, don't judge situations, surrender to what is, accept the way things are, do what you should do in a situation if you feel you have to apply for jobs, interviews, etc. But then leave it, let it be. And that is precisely what has happened in your case, that allowing what is to happen has been given the space to happen. So thank you. That's very beautiful, Rahul. And all the best.
I really want to thank you.
In the new job.
I really want to thank you, Gautam. I mean, though I haven't been able to connect with you like on a regular basis or the teaching, it's in the background, always running, you know, somehow it is settled in. Actually, I have a question about, I have another question. Uh-huh. So I'm part of this group, a Buddhist group where we chant and we pray, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's called SGI Buddhism. Ever since I've been in this teaching, I find bits of it being very superficial, and it's harder for me to connect with the existing group. I have to do it because I have no other family or I live alone here. And much of the discussion that happens can be easily answered by this teaching, actually. But I am not allowed to because, you know, it's going against.
Yes.
I really don't know how to navigate this. Should I take a step back or, because whenever I give answers which come from this non-dual perspective, it does answer their question, but it feels like as though I'm transgressing on some other, you know.
Sure, sure. And it could be a transgression because you see, these are separate things. These are separate paths. Although all paths lead to the same goal, everyone has their techniques and their way of teaching, let's say. So it can create confusion as well for someone on the other side if you speak to them and let's say they are not open to it. So yet one has to be practical, pragmatic. Like you said, you don't have family and they are your family there. And so that is taken at that level. But where you know, where am I finding my true peace? Am I finding it there or am I finding it here? You stay with that. You see, because the teaching is such that those who are drawn to it will be drawn to it without your intervention. Just by the way you are. If someone asks Rahul, hey Rahul, what changed for you? You seem to be different. Something seems to have changed. Then by all means, you know. But beyond that, if there was someone not in a group like that, let's say a friend you had in Germany who didn't already belong to a certain structure and organization, then by all means, share your experience because you have benefited from it. But when someone is already on another path, it would be a disservice to kind of, create confusion because that is what happens and allow them to come forward and ask because this also reminds me, I'll tell you something. My first talk I ever gave was in Pune. I had written my first book, Pointers from Ramesh Balsekar, and someone in Pune invited me to give a talk there. And so I went to Ramesh and he said, this is what has happened. So he said, what do you feel like doing? I said, I don't feel like going because I'm not a talker. I'm not into public speaking. I have none of those qualities and I'm uncomfortable with it. And he said, all right, what you do is send them 10 copies of the book. Tell your friend to circulate in his group these 10 copies. Let them read it. It's a small book, very small book. And if they like what they have read, then you have to do it. And that is precisely what happened. I told my friend, I said, I'm sending you these 10 books. See if they resonate with it first, if there's any interest in meeting me. And he called up after a month and said, they would love to meet you. And then I felt, okay, then this trip is destined also. And I was surely not comfortable because I didn't like this idea of people looking at me. It made me quite nervous. But then I told myself that, in my mind, I said, I didn't bring myself here. It's the teaching and consciousness which did. And I have to allow it to function uninterrupted by the me and my insecurities. So that's it. So, if you need the group and you like them and it gives you some comfort, by all means. And keep the understanding separate for whoever's drawn to it. And this is based on Buddhist chanting, and Rameshji would say, the Buddha is my friend.
Yeah. Thank you, God.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Holger.
Yes, Gautam. I just wanted to simply say that it feels very good to have Gautam in my consciousness.
That's very sweet. Always so kind.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, Abhishek.
Good morning, Gautam.
Good morning.
Yeah. So I would like to share a very short instance. So how the teaching is sinking in. So yesterday I saw a pop-up that you will be giving an interview at 8:30, right? So I wanted to attend it. And but somehow what happened is like, it was 9:30 and I saw, oh my God, the interview must already been over and I did not attend it. So had I been earlier myself, I would have said, oh my God, why did I not attend this? I should have attended this. And I'm feeling so bad. But yesterday what I felt was there was no psychological thinking to it. I said, I had to attend it. And it was 9:30. I could not attend it because I was involved with my daughter playing. And somehow I missed that event. So the very first thing which I had to attend it was not in my hand, because your interview was popped up that if you would like to go here and if you're interested. So that was not in my control, that the interview came up to me and I said, I want to go. And when I could not attend it, so nothing happened. It was like, okay, it's okay. Because it was not meant to happen, it did not happen.
Right.
So that was the thing I wanted to share, that I think that that's how teaching is sinking in. And there was no psychological thinking that I should have attended it. Why did not I attend it? How could I miss it? So it had to happen. It happened. That's it.
Yeah. And that thought may also arise that, oh God, oh damn, I missed it. But that thought.
Yes.
You'll say, oh, exactly. I would have loved to do it. I'd love to attend. You know,
yeah.
It's not like, oh, it didn't matter whether I attended it or not, but it didn't happen.
Yes.
Something else happened.
So the very first place I had to attend it because I wanted to because I said, okay, let's attend it. But then it was not meant to happen.
Yes.
No, I just clicked.
View everything in life like that, not just interviews.
Yeah, that's right.
Every hurt is meant to happen.
It's meant to happen.
And through whom it happens is quite irrelevant.
So yesterday I was listening to one of the talks of Ramesh Paljekar sir as well about self-realization. Mm-hmm. So it was an old talk. And so whatever happens to us, it happens. It's not in our hand, right?
Yes.
And wherever you are born, which family, which circumstances, it's neither in your hand too.
Yes.
And your previous conditioning is again, it's not in your hand. So whenever you take a decision, it's not actually a free will.
Yes.
It depends upon whatever was not in your hands. So how could it be a free will?
Correct. But yet, in the realm of duality, Abhishek has to act as if he has free will, because otherwise he becomes a zombie. So he has to take decisions. He has to use his intellect, buddhi, and move on in life, knowing that the results are not in his control, and the foundation of his so-called free will has also been created by God. But yet, he has to take decisions.
So, Gautam, does that mean that if the script is already written, and let's say I say, okay, I will do this, and then it happens, you know, that things turn out my way, and I say that, okay, I decided to do this, that's why it happened. So that means it was bound to happen, right? Because the script was already there.
Yes, correct.
So in a way, it's an illusion that I've been doing it, but no. Because in that way also, it was bound to happen.
Correct. In fact, the problem with this is that, you know, the ego tends to misunderstand this aspect of free will and says, oh, that means I should not do anything because whatever has to happen will happen. So the ego has come in through the back door. And now the ego, in enforcing an act of not doing, is actually enforcing more doership. What was a natural alignment with the way one was created by God, one is flowing with that, you know? But then the ego starts playing this game. Oh no, I am in control. So I will also not do. You see, that's how the ego operates. So that is a pitfall to be watched out for, because free will, as I keep saying, does not make you complacent, does not make you a walkover. No, it's the opposite. It gives you the courage to know that your free will is truly not your free will. So you come in alignment with God's will, so to speak. That's what happens.
So when, because I read Sai Satchalte as well, and I'm a follower of Shirdi Sai Baba also. So when I read the instances and it says that people used to go there and their diseases used to get cured. So right. Was that mean that it was bound to get cured? That's why it got cured.
For them,
yes. Yeah. So it was not that something Baba did for something for them to get. It was bound to happen. Exactly. Baba had to do it, right?
Why doesn't it happen for everyone?
Right.
You see, it reminds me of this instance in Ramana Maharshi's presence. There was a family, they were devotees of his, and their child was ailing very badly. I mean, they almost gave up on the child. And the child got cured, you know, and they were convinced that Ramana Maharshi had something to do with it because they had completely surrendered to him. So they went up to him and, you know, thanked him for curing their child. And he said, look here, I had not even a sankalpa. I had no wish that so-and-so's child be cured. Let me make that clear. But you have come into the space and energy field of the divine force, and it does precisely that which it does. And in that process, something happened and your child got cured. So this is very important to understand because, you know, firstly, if we are totally surrendered to the force of the divine, to God, you may call it Baba, you may call it anything, right? Then that higher power is allowed to function. But what we do is we go to sages with prayers and supplications, give me this, give me that, thinking that they don't know. So many mails I get, you know, that I'm telling Baba, give me the perfect job. I'm telling Baba, give me this relationship. If you consider him the absolute, do you really need to tell him what he should give you? I mean, wake up, you know. I mean, that's the whole Maya, Abhishek.
So Gautam, does that mean that Ramana Maharshi did not have even one sankalpa or one thought? That means he was his true being, the light.
Yes.
That's why it was purest, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's it. Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. I think we can end there for today. And sit in silence for a few minutes. I'll just change the screen view so I can see all of y'all.